Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Pan's Labyrinth and fairy tale movies. For more information about the news and links we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome back to Geeks On.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome, my geeklings,
to a new brand spanking year.
Actually, this marks our second anniversary.
Is it our second anniversary or third anniversary?
It's our third anniversary.
Only if you count our first episode as our first anniversary.
Good point.
Okay.
The first one, yeah. You don't count your first birthday.
Unless you're Chinese, in which case, when you're born, you're 1 year old.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
You're making that up.
No, I'm not.
You are too.
I am.
You're not 1 year old, you're one.
Chinese count your age as being one from your birth.
But it's not 1 year old unless they somehow count the nine.
They round up.
Well, I've never heard anything about that because, and I'll have you know, I went to see Curse of the Yellow Flower last night, so I am now an expert in Chinese
culture. All Chinese history.
Absolutely, and you people are messed up.
Yes, we are.
That's all I have to say on the matter.
Is it another Five Kingdoms, everybody dying, poor princess story?
No, it's five members of a family, everybody dying, poor helpless princess getting killed by ninjas.
Movie. Oh.
Same thing.
Same
This movie thing. Is chock full of nuts, man. It's
Is it?
Like... incest, murder, betrayal, it's got it all.
Sounds like standard Chinese fare.
Sounds like a My Network
show.
The
problem is, it's like, I think a lot of the Chinese dramas I've seen, it's a drama, it's not a martial arts flick.
Okay.
A lot of the Chinese dramas I've seen before, like, the acting translates,
okay,
right? Even if the language doesn't. In this one, there was a different style of acting going on, where people started laughing at multiple points of the most dramatic moments of the movie.
Right.
Because, like,
audience members or the actors?
Audience members. Like,
Oy.
We were losing our crap because it was just so... how can you say that? For
Don's
a
actually
really
foaming.
Long time, you know?
Do they have the significant looks?
Oh, so
where
many.
They do the significant look and then
chock full of them.
They just
well, the
linger.
Movie stars Gong Li.
Right.
Like, if those of you who know Chinese movies, Gong Li does significant looks.
Yeah,
that's pretty
anyway.
Much her thing.
Yeah.
You know, but those of you who are geeks, and I suspect there may be a few in our audience, those
How
of you who played
you?
Call of Cthulhu, right? Watch at the end of the movie when the secret princess discovers the horrible secret that her family's been keeping from her, and watch her fail her sand check. Okay, it's the most beautiful representation of somebody just botching a sand roll you've ever seen. Like, she sits there staring in horror for about 5 minutes while other people are talking, right? And then she clutches her necklace.
Lose two turns.
Her eyes, yeah, that's the lose. She lose two turns to stunnage.
Right.
And then she must flee the area. She literally just starts screaming and running. But it's this.
So
it's
did she roll a one?
She completely rolled a one.
She rolled a one.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's that sustained, high-pitched squealing and running with the hands in the air.
Oh,
it was
God.
So...
it sounds like a crap movie.
I was so laughing. Well, the thing is, it's not a crap movie, but it's hard to get what the hell's going on sometimes.
That's standard
there
Chinese
were multiple
fare.
Points where I just gave up trying to follow the story and just appreciated the pretty sets. There were
right.
a lot of really pretty sets.
There we are.
And the costuming is the best costuming I've seen since, you know, Star Wars.
Well, before we go continue our Geek Week, maybe we should introduce ourselves to people who have just joined us in this new year.
Hello, thank you, Dig.com.
Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional and a writer here in Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Matt Yan King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Peter Robinson, and I'm a screenwriter and... filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Yep. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome, my
fellow geeks.
Two geeks on.
So anybody else have a good geek week?
I had a weird back and forth geek holiday where I scored major over the geek holiday. I got an Xbox 360.
Welcome
I got a
to
flat
the 360.
Thank you. I got a flat screen. I got a new camera.
You got a flat screen?
Yeah.
Computer monitor.
Computer monitor.
Not a,
yes, not a flat screen like I'm cool. No. No, actually just like a flat screen small one. Although it is 21 inches. Anyway,
You can hook your 360 to that, probably.
I can?
Yeah. I think you have... what type of inputs do you have?
I think I have all the inputs. I have DVI and...
I think that's the one input. Anyway, we'll
figure it out. But so that's the great news. The bad news is my film is on a complete stop.
Oh, shit.
What?
Wait,
why?
Officially?
Officially on a complete stop. Linda Lee has put the brakes on completely and fully. She has said she will not negotiate for another few months. They have stopped my training effectively right now. And they're going to figure out over the next few months whether or not it's going to go. And
when did that happen? Friday?
Yesterday.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
And, yeah, I got the word down from Rob Cohen, and he basically said, we've offered her millions and millions of dollars, and she's really nervous and does not necessarily want to see Bruce come back to life again.
Mm.
And I, at the end of the day, I have to go, it's her husband, not my idol.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
I get, you know, and if it's my mom, I get, you know, and I'm frustrated as hell, but I'm the smallest cog in
well,
the wheel.
Okay,
you know?
Now it's not at a stop. It's at a pause while they pause to renegotiate.
No, no. They're closing down the office and stuff like that because they're not expecting it to go any further. But that being said, the new negotiations are whether or not, because I signed these contracts, my picture deal with DreamWorks still stands. So that's the negotiation right now.
You
want to
play Kato?
Exactly. Yeah. Is to see whether or not, which would be dreamy, but, you know, so yet again, more Hollywood. Yay, genius. And the
Welcome to Hollywood.
Welcome to Hollywood. And the other thing is that there's a bozo doing my voiceover of Illidan on Warcraft, and I think he sounds like ass. And people keep on sending me hate mail. It's not me. It's a bozo. He sounds like Julian Sands. I'm sorry.
He's probably a...
He sounds okay. He's just not up to the bar that's been set, you know?
Thank you, Don. I appreciate that.
Well, you set a high bar, you know?
Yeah, it's...
If there was any way for to bash on you at this moment, I probably would. But I just... No. You did a good job. You know?
Yeah.
I say that with love.
Did you have a good... Did you have any movies canceled on you?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
did you have the rug pulled out from me?
No, I had a good buddy that I grew up with, mm-hmm. you know, a geek from way
Bob.
Back.
Bob.
Bob came out.
Babs.
Blackadder fans.
Yeah, and he's completely
was that
not...
Was dramatic to you?
I'm sorry?
His coming out.
Yes, it was very dramatic.
traumatic.
Whoa. Yeah. Yes. He came out to visit, and we.
I liked Bob. He was nice.
He's great. It's funny. He's not a geek anymore. He's got a little tiny bit of geek in him, but you know, mm-hmm. he spends most of the time watching.
Were you trying to like turn him back? Because every night it was like you were playing games.
We got him to play some board games. He had a good time, you know. But he spent most. You know, he was really into kind of like watching the football and, you know,
right. yeah.
the anti-geek activities. But we dragged him back in kicking and screaming. So.
Maybe you should have just gotten a really good copy of Madden. And so he felt like he was watching football. And then there suddenly you go, no, here's a controller.
You know what?
Yeah.
You should have tried to find... There's supposedly an awesome football board game called Pizza Box Football. Hmm. Anyway, it's supposed to be really good. And
Pizza Box Football?
Pizza Box Football. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's supposed to be good.
Oh, and I'm supposed
find
to...
Find a copy of Blood Bowl.
Blood Bowl?
Yeah, but that's like a hardcore...
Do you remember Cyber Ball?
I love...
That was my favorite
game
back
Sega,
in the day.
Sega game?
It was a Sega game. It was all
with the bomb.
Robots.
Football with
yeah,
robots.
The, bomb.
The
yeah.
ball is a bomb.
So, why? And bring that game back.
Downloadable Xbox Live downloadable
I'll see
content
what I can do.
Online.
Oh, that
the
would
problem
be
is
so
a lot
good.
Of these older ideas, like they're kind of owned.
Oh,
you know?
They're so Sega owned. Owns that lockdown. Yeah. There's no way you're going to get that out.
Welcome to Cyber
I had, I had... pretty good geek weeks. You know, I thought it was a great science fiction movie month or
oh,
two
oh, man,
months.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last night I saw Children
Dream
of
Girls.
Men.
Oh, I hate you.
Have you seen Children of Men?
No, I wanted to go with you.
Oh, I thought you had gone. I thought I was the last person.
Don shakes his fist at you.
I saw that last night, and I thought it was a great film. It's not the most... It's not a perfect film, but... Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it was a great film. And then there was The Fountain that came out, you know, a couple months ago.
You loved The Fountain.
I thought The Fountain was pretty good. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, it, again, had problems. None of these are perfect movies, but...
What would be your definition of a perfect movie?
Blade Runner.
Okay.
but the one last night had some great, great concepts. A little heavy-handed in its concept. Like, it's... You're like,
it's got, like, crazy good reviews.
It's good. It's a good movie. And we saw Pan's Labyrinth, which we'll be talking about today.
Excellent.
So once you guys see Fountain and Children of Men, maybe we can do a double sci-fi
talk. Yeah, definitely.
Well, have we all seen The Fountain at this point?
No, I have not seen The Fountain yet.
And you've all seen Children of Men at this point?
Yep.
No.
I have. Oh, okay.
We'll go. Don and me. We'll go.
All right.
Let's do some news.
Let's do some news.
Hit the music.
Who's starting?
That was amazing. That was amazing. Donnie?
Gotta love the music. One quick blurb. Though Aaron is well known for bringing the rumors to our forum.
Oh, there's plenty more to come.
I am claiming a new title within our news circle as the Rumor Dispeller.
Oh, okay.
Rumors have been circulating on the web that Neil Gaiman will be writing the next Silent Hill movie. Neil Gaiman, the popular writer of the Sandman series, Good Omens, Stardust, everything. One of the most popular writers of our generation.
I got a collector's edition of The Sandman for Christmas, so if anybody wants to borrow it, it's all of the first volume of his stuff.
You shouldn't have just said that, because you're going to open your door one day, minding your own business, going out to jog or something, and I'm going to come out of nowhere. And I'm going to tackle your ass to the floor, run into your apartment, and loot the place.
All right.
Gymkhana!
apparently, the director, Christopher Gans, of the original Silent Hill movie, made the announcement that Gaiman would be co-writing the script with Roger Avery.
Announced it?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Neil Gaiman knows nothing about this. So it's circulating on the web.
We're going to get that Gaiman guy.
Put it up on Snopes.com, people. Gaiman is not writing Silent Hill 2.
Okay.
Just thought you should know.
Wow.
Well, yet.
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 Just because he doesn't know about it doesn't mean they're going to
offer. That's true. Like, it's just a matter of time before...
It was like when MGM's like, you know... Yeah, Peter Jackson's on board of The Hobbit, and Peter Jackson goes, I never got a phone call.
That's great.
Some rumors as well. I've got a lot of HD rumors and news. The first one I'll start with was a couple days ago. There were some pictures that came out of the back, what looks like the back of a new Xbox 360, which has... HDMI out. So everyone's like, okay, are they releasing a new model of that will allow you to do a digital output to your television or what? So everyone, there was actual photo of this. Could be Photoshop. We don't know. I mean, all these things can be faked. So that was the first rumor. Well, today, hot off the press, a news agency leaked some more Xbox 360 news. That there is going to be a kind of another version, just kind of like an upgrade in a way, that they're going to be showing at CES, which I will be going to.
Woot.
That it will have a 120 gig hard drive as opposed to like, what we got, like 10 or 8 or 12 or something like that. An HDMI port.
Can we upgrade that hard drive?
Yes, if they release one. But right now they...
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Okay.
And that it will also have kind of a DVR TiVo functionality. All put in.
Really?
There.
Oh my goodness.
Didn't you say that
is very smart.
Well, oh my goodness. Yeah, well the TiVo one is
picture
really
smart. Picture.
I still don't have TiVo, so that's really, really appealing.
Broadcast shows, picture in picture, video on demand, and DVR.
Wait, Don, you can get the cool Xbox 360.
I know.
It'll only cost $200 more dollars.
Well,
keep dodging, Peter.
I don't think we won't know if it will cost more or not, but I think it's kind of a bad idea.
Too many bells and whistles?
No, that there'll be a when there are more and more choices for the same machine, then you get this weird split. As long as it doesn't affect the gameplay,
right?
Like I don't want this to be a PC where you have to upgrade because certain games work and certain games don't work. That doesn't work for me. You buy a console because you don't have to upgrade it, but every 5 or 6 years, because they all work, all the games work. You know what I mean?
Okay,
we're not buying PCs. If I want a damn PC, I'd go buy a PC and I'll upgrade it every 9 months in order to play the one game I want to play.
Right?
You know, Jesus.
Didn't you say that the Xbox 360 was going to be able to play HD video or Blu-ray?
Go buy the HD DVD player right now for $199.
Okay.
Hook it up and play HDVD movies right now.
Okay, so it plugs into the Xbox.
Plugs right into the Xbox.
Okay.
Huh. And apparently, it's the best HD DVD player out there. And it's it's only $199 if you already have your Xbox 360.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, that's like saying...
I haven't paid any attention to Xbox prices. Have they dropped since Christmas?
No.
There was no reason to.
That's true.
Everyone was expecting them, and I think maybe they probably had a number. At last E3, everyone was expecting maybe an announcement of a price drop. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But when Sony comes out with a $600 box, $200 more, they were like, yeah, right.
Did you read the scalper news about the PS3?
The scalper? No.
It's like 800 to 1,000 now? Or?
Well, they're trying, but no one's buying.
That was that way before Christmas.
Right.
Before Christmas, it even got down to regular price on eBay.
And people still were not buying.
Huh.
You know, the scalpers can't unload their product. Which really is just beautiful justice to me, but
yeah, I think that there's probably still a brisk sale of PS3s. I mean,
I'm sure once more games come out,
right. I think it has the same problem that Xbox did when it first came out. I mean, the first games when the Xbox came out were like, okay.
Well, because they're rushed to market, it's understandable,
right? And it happens every time. Problem is that it's $600 and there's not many great games.
Right. Exactly.
With a 360, you're like, I'll buy it, and this is a cool game.
You got a few games.
Yeah, and more games will come. Here's oh, shit.
The things I could do with $600 on my PC.
I'm just really stuck with how really good Xbox Live has become.
Yeah,
I mean, I was really, really struck with that when I got this 360, so I'm impressed.
And I mapped my face to...
I know, it's frightening.
It's really creepy.
To my Rainbow Six character.
Yeah.
It's fun as hell. Yeah.
Part of the fact for that you look like Aryan youth. Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do.
All right, Peter.
All right. My news is about a new cancer cure that's been patented. It hasn't been tested on animals, hasn't been tested on human beings, but in terms of the Petri dish type testing, it's done really well.
Cool.
Okay.
Save the Petri dishes.
Basically, we've known for, maybe 20 years that there's a short chain fatty acid called butyrate, which can slow the spread of cancer cells.
Yeah, we all knew that.
Okay. All knew that.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
The problem is that it takes a lot of high doses of the compound to effectively eradicate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Is it deadly
in and of itself?
I don't really know.
Okay.
But so they really wanted to find ways of joining it with other compounds to get it into the body more effectively.
So yes, okay. It's like chemo. I mean, it's a chemical, so I'm sure it's
not so good.
Yeah. It doesn't say that, but what it does say is that the added partners that they've been trying to do often had unsafe side effects.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, what they've decided to do is they've decided to try more. They have been experimenting with innocuous sugar molecules.
Cut it with baking soda.
There you go.
Works every time.
Yeah. That usually works, and the smell is really
reduced.
Baby
laxatives.
There you
go, Peter.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy.
We're just going to derail.
No, but they decided that they were going to try and find a partner that's a sugar that would actually help the process as well. It wouldn't just be a passive thing to help get it into the system, but it would also fight the cancer as well. So this double attack triggers cellular suicide, also called apoptosis in the cancer cells. I just love that. That sounds really cool. Cellular suicide. I don't know.
Yeah.
And
good name for a band.
Apoptosis.
But basically what they did is they tested it with a bunch of different hybrids. And after 3 to 5 days, cancer growth had slowed in all of the dishes. But after 15 days, one of the particular hybrids that they had had killed all the cancer, whereas in the other tests, the cancer had basically gone back up to full speed.
Wow. Mm.
So,
apoptosis.
Yeah. So, anyway, it's kind of a neat idea that it sounds like a simple cure. It's not that, not that crazy, and if it works, it would be very cool.
That'd be neat.
You know?
Apoptosis.
It sounds like an Egyptian god.
Yeah, that's what I was exactly about. Apoptosis the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Ramses. All right. So, this one's for you, Don.
Oh, good.
Fighting
game story?
There is now a new high-tech temple to fundamentalist Christianity.
Oh, God.
And it's due to open in the heart of Middle America next May.
How many gay pastors do they have?
Right. Aiming to provide the grandest repos yet to Darwinian evolutionary theory. It is a creation museum. It's going to be a huge creation museum.
We can get more hate mail that we rag on...
Christianity?
Christianity.
GY. Staff and supporters of the Answers in Genesis organization call it the Creation Museum. But secular scientists would take issue with the use of either word to describe the almost completed building that stands just a few miles west of Cincinnati on the borders of Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. It's got a planetarium. It's got a virtually finished bookstore. It's got everything. It's got dinosaurs.
It has a planetarium. Is it show that the Earth is in the center of the universe?
I'm not exaggerating. Yeah. The museum's aim is to bring Genesis, the first book of the Bible, to life for all ages and to promote the belief that Earth is less than 10,000 years old.
I thought it was six.
Yeah, less than 10. Six would be less than 10.
Well, I know, but why don't they just say six?
Math is hard.
Yeah. Well, maybe they're a little hazy on the whole 6-10 thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I'm completely fine with the Creation Museum. Actually, I think it would be kind of cool to go.
Yeah. Everyone who works at the museum has to sign on to the belief that the living Earth was created in 6 24-hour days.
Wait, you can't get in?
You cannot work there unless you sign on, rejecting the convention that most scientists view as the fact that life evolves slowly over millions of years. To hammer the point home, two smiling children clad in tasteful animal skins work and play alongside a pair of baby Tyrannosaurus Rex in the museum. That's one of the exhibits that they have.
Oh, that's like the big... The
dinosaurs and humans living side by side. No,
oh,
no, no.
Oh, they actually believe dinosaurs
They exist? Believe dinosaurs live side by side with humans. They were put there...
I thought that was a... That's a new twist.
Put there by God... You know, put but here by God, one of God's animals died off.
It was explained to me by a Christian I met in college that dinosaur bones were put there by Satan to mislead people.
But I thought it was the bones only. I didn't know that. I didn't think anyone believed that they lived together.
That's my understanding too. That's what I thought.
Huh. Yeah, one of the
it's a new theory.
One of the guys comments. He said, "You go to some of the major museums, and dinosaurs are their teaching icon. So they're going to be their teaching icon as well."
You know, I just gotta say something.
Yeah. Buckle down
Why
the hatches,
are you commenting
boys?
On this in a serious way?
No, you know, it's interesting because I went and I actually saw the Dalai Lama speak.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, one thing I was really kind of impressed by was he goes, you know what? Not everything that's in my religion is true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow.
And he brought out, he basically brought out some things that talked about, like, you know, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's like, you know, the moon is a silver plate type stuff, you know?
Right.
It wasn't really that, but it was something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And he goes, look, you know, science has kind of proven that this is, you know, that this is what it is. Not, you know, not everything in my religion is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because it says it in a book doesn't make it true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, come on, people. Let's have an open mind here. You know, just because it's in your freaking book doesn't mean that everything in it is true. In fact, the book contradicts itself.
Well, here's the, there, let me riposte.
Oh yeah, passed away.
Okay, here's what one of the main doctors of the museum says says that she is concerned that many Christians do not accept the literal truth of the creation. It's foundational. If you cannot believe in Genesis, then why believe in any other part of the Bible? You can't pick and choose. You can't say this part is right and this part is wrong. She said halfway through supervising an online tutorial in her office. Basically, you have to pick, and if Genesis is wrong, then the whole rest of it is wrong because Genesis is the beginning. I agree
with
you.
By the way, we do understand that there are plenty of geeks out there with multiple ideas and theories about this, so this is not a geek side.
Yes.
No, yeah.
But for some reason, we like bringing it up on this show. Okay, and the forums like bringing it up.
Come on,
don't ask me why.
Look, the majority of Christians, you know, well, maybe not the majority, there's a giant, huge group of Christians who do not believe this crap.
Yeah,
you
know? I know. I mean
well, and there
you
are
know.
Some who do.
And know? There are some who do, you know.
And you know,
and admittedly,
if you believe in a magical beginning of something, who are we to take it away from you? But
well, first of all, know? why do you believe it's magical? Couldn't it be just as science that there is a creator?
Well, I'm using the term magical to describe something that I cannot describe.
Okay, well, guess you what? Know? There's a lot of magic
like
in
a divine,
your life then,
you know. Absolutely.
All hey, right. Man. Well, then I don't understand. Like, just because there's a creator doesn't mean it's fantastical. It just means, like, if I create
magical,
a camera,
you're using this like I'm using the word magical as a disparaging.
You
remark.
Are using magical.
No,
as disparaging.
It's not. I would right. love to believe in
magical is biblical,
in the divine.
Magic
you know?
Is biblical.
I believe in the divine, but I don't necessarily believe that you know someone's going to run out there and part the Red
no.
Sea to prove your faith to you.
The three guys who came to the three wise men who came to Jesus were the three what? Magi,
which meant wise men,
right? But that's where magic comes from. That's what
well,
ma- that's the
saying,
derivation
I'm
of the
just
word.
Saying that you know the idea that there is a creator a lot of people think that that has to be a spiritual thing, but it could just be the fact of life, and that's science fact.
See, I don't have a problem with the idea that there's a creator. I don't have a problem with the idea that there's a God.
Right.
Okay. I do have a problem with the idea that, you know, something is in a book, and because it's written in the book, and because I grew up with this book, instead of, you know, because I happen to have grown up, you know, say, in the United States, where the majority of people are Christian.
Therefore, it's an empirical fact.
And I've read this book, that this is the gospel and the truth above all other, you know, religions, gospels, truths, and books. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. I mean, you know, it's like, what was the bumper sticker on the car that I saw, or someone told me about? Zeus is God, the Iliad tells me so.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Yeah, Zeus is God, read the Iliad, right?
Yeah, read the Iliad. You know, it's like, and it's like, you know...
It's not creationism that I have the issue with, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's the selective misunderstanding of the science.
I agree.
Creative
evolution is a good term, though.
creationism tends to utilize to try and bring people to its side. For example, showing people walking hand in hand with dinosaurs,
right?
Which is ignoring the science. You know, that's not misunderstanding it. That's denying the
absolutely.
Science.
Absolutely.
Can I tell you about my cool card game?
No,
I think
it's an evolution card game where you start by placing a single cell on the table in front of you. Mm. And then you have trait cards in your hand, and you add.
Is this something you've invented?
No, it's in my head. I'm thinking about maybe
great.
Putting
it. Oh, yeah, we talked about
and
this before.
And you add traits like dominoes to your card, and you evolve your character. But it's going to be called intelligent design, because everybody plays a god using the miracle of evolution to evolve your.
That's really
creature.
Smart, Aaron. That could go.
It's interesting.
So ching, ching.
Do it.
Get it from both sides. All right, I'm done with this whole topic. Right. I mean, how many times can we talk about this?
Many, many,
many
more.
Many, many, many more. Trust me.
I've got a mail item to bring up at the end of the show that deals with that, too.
Okay.
Donnie.
The Last Unicorn. All right, everyone here has seen the movie The Last Unicorn, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some of us, it's a very fond childhood memory. It's one of the few, like, fairy tales that was invented in our lifetime that I think lives up to the word fairy tale, you know? Well, The Last Unicorn has been a worldwide release success in theatrical film, cable, VHS, and DVD versions. But to date, the author and screenwriter, Peter S. Beagle, has never been paid anything from the millions of dollars the film has earned. All right? So now, by special arrangement...
Do you have, like, a bad agent or something?
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the backstory. I'm getting this directly from the press release that was sent to us by this publishing company.
Huh.
Now, by special arrangement with Lionsgate Entertainment, customers can ensure that more than half their purchase price of this 25th anniversary edition DVD will go directly to support Peter S. Beagle and his projects by buying through Conlin Press at www.conlinpress.com. So
you have to go to a certain place in order to get
the
money.
It's a very specific place. It's not the 25th anniversary edition that you'll get at Best Buy. It's the one you buy online from this site. So if this is a story you love, if it's a movie you love, if you appreciate the guy's work, and you'd like to see the dreamer, the geek who made this, get a little money off of the idea that he came up with, please buy off of the site.
Man, support that must your have been geeks. A weird deal.
You know, it's not unique. Like freaking J. Michael Straczynski, the guy who made Babylon 5,
mm-hmm.
barely a penny from the series because of the way he constructed
the contract. Is it barely a penny compared to the amount that's made, or really barely a penny?
Who, J. Michael Straczynski?
Like, did he receive $1 million, or did he
probably
receive...
Probably less than that.
Yeah.
5,000.
He received significantly less than any other writer would have for a series that made over billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I can understand,
but he did that for creative control.
I can, I can understand those type of decisions, but barely a penny is
Well, J.
Usually...
Michael Straczynski for the Babylon 5, didn't he say it was still in the red?
No, he's being told by the company
that it's still,
that it's still in the
typical.
Red, even
that's
though
typical.
It's made billions of dollars in DVD sales.
They do that with independents all the time. They say, you know, we'd like to distribute your film. As soon as it makes money, we'll give you a cut.
Yeah.
And then they take, you know, a $35,000 movie, and they say the only way to make money off this is to break, like, $50 million.
Men in Black officially has not made money yet.
Bull crap.
Spider-Man. Has not made money. Stanley had to sue Universal to get his money.
Yeah, it's funny. They do all sorts of crazy.
Well, but you know, here's the thing. It's your
eyes.
You know you're gonna go edit in the editing studio that you own. Yeah, you know, the studio owns the editing studio. So then they go and they edit the film in the studio's editing, studio, and they charge the film money to do that. and they can kind of charge whatever they want to do that.
It's
so
like
it's
money.
Kind of funny money. Yeah. It's like, you know, they're making money by charging the film money. Does
but
that
not
sense?
Only that, it's a most of that stuff is marketing bullshit numbers. Yeah. All right. I have some HD DVD news again. You know, we have HD DVD and Blu-ray, the two mm-hmm. competing formats. Well, people, the movie industry and the technology industry, well, at least the other part of the technology industry, they're kind of over it, it looks like. So Warner Brothers plans to announce a single video disc that has both Blu-ray and HDVD burned on the disc.
Huh.
So you can put it in either player. They're like,
good.
You know what? They just don't want to deal with this bullshit. So they're gonna they figured out a way to do both. And
they can keep content and
double-sided.
Not,
I'm not sure how they. Well, a Blu-ray disc holds like 50 or 60 gigs.
Right.
So and a
wow.
And HD DVD doesn't even hold close to that. So if it's kind of a Blu-ray technology, maybe they can squeak it on there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, not only that, but apparently there's a lot. I hope to see this at CES. There's a lot of companies who are releasing video machines that play both HD DVD and Blu-ray discs.
Are you going to do interviews when you're at CES?
No, but I am going to take a lot of notes, and I might bring a recorder.
Bring
your
recorder,
just
in case.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm hoping you can see some of those because I think people are sick and tired of this format war bullshit. I mean, you and I don't mm-hmm. give a shit. We just want to watch HD movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we don't give a shit.
I don't
who,
even care if
called.
I watch HD movies. I just
Actually,
want
I like
something
the name
that looks
Blu-ray.
Cool.
Blu-ray is such a cooler name than HD.
That is true. It is
yeah,
cooler.
But you can say HDTV and people know what you're talking about without any kind of background.
But they'd know, you know, Blu-ray was, you know... Anyway, okay.
You, if you saw,
I think it's a ray gun.
Matt, if you saw on a really big television an HD movie,
mm-hmm.
you would.
I just want it to look cool. I don't care what it's called.
Oh, right, yes.
That's what I'm saying. Peter?
Anyway.
All right. Thanks to Matt for this news story.
Yeah, welcome.
Long arms of the world's tallest man saves dolphins in China.
this is a scientist who, the scientists are like, how are we going to do this?
So basically what happened was some dolphins in an aquarium in Fushun, Liaoning.
Go white boy. Go white boy.
Hold on. Move your lips while Matt pronounces it.
Okay, ready?
All right.
Yeah, this is good radio.
Fushun, Liaoning province.
Okay.
Very good, Peter. Very good.
They That's swallowed great. The plastic from the edge of their pool, and they got it in their stomach, and it was trapped. So then what they tried to do is they tried to operate on them, and the operation wouldn't work. So what creative thing do they do? Well, they call up Bao Zishun, a 7-foot-tall, almost 9-inch herdsman from Inner Mongolia. And they bring him over here, and they hold the dolphin's mouths open, and he sticks his arm down their throat, into their stomach, feels around, finds the plastic, and pulls it out. I mean, brilliant!
And they had this guy's number on the speed dial?
Well, you know, it's like, who thought of it? I got two questions.
I have his number in speed dial, but that's for a whole different reason.
My first question is, he likes him tall. My first question is, who thought of this?
Right.
My second question is, how the hell can someone get their arm down a dolphin's, you know, throat into their stomach, and you can't find some sort of tool that'll do the same thing?
Yeah.
But, you know, interesting.
But you want to be able to... you want to be able to feel you need a tactile feeling
no.
at the end so that you can...
Herring, mackerel, herring, mackerel.
Plastic! You don't want to hurt the animal. So.
No, I understand. But look, we take things out of human stomachs all the time. You know, I mean,
we don't...
But we don't hire Allen Iverson to do it.
We do it through the mouth.
Yeah, we do.
We don't do it through the mouth.
Yes, you do.
You take shit out of someone's stomach by sticking something down the
person's
throat. Yeah,
you put it. Basically, what happens is if you swallow something that's poisonous and caustic, that it would be more violent to throw it up.
That's different than a big, like a baseball or a big piece of plastic. They don't make you throw up plastic.
Well, you know. Come on.
Poison is one thing, but a big, sharp object, and you're somebody, they're not reaching down there and pulling it out.
Okay. Maybe it's because we don't have anybody tall enough, Aaron.
Yeah.
Mao Wing, or whatever his name is. We need him on speed.
Yao Ming. Yeah.
Yao Ming.
Get higher, Yao.
All right.
Moving on.
I'm done with my news.
All right. So in other dolphin news, and much, much sadder, actually, the Baji, or white dolphin in China, has been announced as being completely extinct as a species after 200 million years due to overfishing and craziness in China. And
this is just liberal bullshit.
Yeah. Damn them.
Liberals are hiding those dolphins. Yeah, they spray painted them darker.
Yeah, they're all these ones that look kind of like them, but they've got bottles on their
noses. I hope
they
did. I think they're bottles. Spray paint them and hide them, because maybe we'll have. The last time they saw 13 in 1997, and they haven't seen. They sent 30 scientists up and down the Yangtze River, and they have not been able to find us.
They're
going to
fall into some weird cave and
find them
in
Mississippi.
Find like a whole colony.
One would hope.
With the freaking lasers on their heads.
They all speak fluent French.
Yeah. All right. Anybody?
French-speaking laser dolphins. Albino dolphins.
I have a quick list that people might enjoy. We often cover the technology designed to improve our lives and make the lives of geeks a better place. Well, unfortunately, we know there's the flip side of that. And so new
technology to hold geeks down?
Yes.
Or to spread geeks all over the wall, as the case may be. NewScientist.com has the 10 weapons of the future.
Ooh.
The 10 weapon types that they
anticipate. Is Operation Metal Storm on there?
Well, there's the new guy on Discovery Channel called Future Weapons. He's going to start up January 19th. Mm-hmm. I'm like so psyched to see his
program. These are not specific weapons they're talking about. They're talking about new categories of weapons.
Technologies.
Not specific technologies, but new ideas of technologies they're
working
for.
How we can hurt people.
So, for instance, number 10 is information warfare. This technique interferes with the flow of information vital to enemy operations. Nine, layered missile defense. Offers the best chance to shoot down attacking ballistic missiles, high-power microwave weapons, stun guns, nuclear missiles.
I believe microwaves will come in.
What's new in any of this list so far?
Well, there's new technologies being added onto them. Active denial system, millimeter
Shit,
wave
that's
of
like
microwave
me in a bar.
Beams.
What is an active denial system?
Millimeter wave or microwave beams supposedly make people flee without injuring them. Typically be powered by a generator fitted to a Humvee in crowd control situations.
That's cool.
It's a flea pistol.
Hypersonic aircraft.
It's a fear check.
Which can fly faster than Mach 5 to strike anywhere in the world within 2 hours.
I'm sure we already have that.
Sure. Space-based weapons, which we're still working on. We still haven't quite perfected. High-energy lasers and autonomous weapons. These are robotic vehicles under development that search and destroy enemy troops and equipment on the ground or in the air.
Bad idea.
Risk of friendly troops.
Bad idea.
Have we learned nothing from Terminator?
I think that the aliens are just waiting for us to make a whole bunch of space-based weapons, point them at the Earth, and then they're just going to take them over and go, hey, thanks for the guns.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Any other news?
Last but not least, Bare Naked Ladies, the rock band, who I love, have come out. They released their latest album on a USB stick. And it has all of their songs. They're like, download it, share it with your friends, and then you got a USB stick afterwards. Have fun with it. It'll hold a gig. They're including concert footage, album cover, album art, lots of stuff. So I think it's just a genius idea, and it makes much more sense to me.
Yeah, it's like you're going to rip our CD anyway.
Exactly. Why not? Here's a USB stick. I just think it's a great idea.
Does it have any type of...
How much does it cost to produce a USB stick?
Hmm?
How much does it cost to produce a USB stick?
Well, you can buy it in the stores for like $30-$35, and they're selling the album for $30. So you're getting a USB stick, which you can use afterwards for $30. I think it's a great idea.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. News went long. So let's start. Matt, are you going to this topic today?
The topic today, first of all, we should say is spoiler, 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 spoiler. Pan's Labyrinth. We're going to be discussing Pan's Labyrinth and fairy tales.
And by the way, can I mention just a quick thing about spoilers? We've received emails in the past about spoiler this, spoiler that.
Yep.
Battlestar Season 1. I understand spoilers, you know, calling out spoiler alerts for the last, you know, year season. But guess what? If you're three seasons behind, I'm not calling out spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The guy
Darth Vader, Luke's father. Okay? Boom. Done. Sorry, people.
Oh, my God!
Sorry. You know, I just screwed a whole bunch of people, but that's just the way it is, okay? So, yes, we'll try to call it out, but,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, for current seasons or, you know, maybe even last season, but.
Yeah, if you're holding out that long, it's on you at this point, you know? Sorry. Okay.
So, I have to admit, we got an email from a guy in Iraq who was behind on Battlestar Galactica and freaked when we let something big slip about the
current
season.
I feel bad about that, but, you know.
Sorry, he's getting shot at on daily basis.
Like, and now we're being jerks. Sorry.
Right. His ass is getting shot at, and we can't even cover his ass by not really. I know, that sucks.
Moo moo. Moo moo moo.
Sorry about that. So we're doing a little Geeks on Fairy Tales, specifically targeting Pan's Labyrinth. The metaphors, the symbols, how Pan's Labyrinth.
We're doing fairy tale movies.
Fairy tale movies.
Right.
Very specifically.
With a focus on Pan's Labyrinth.
With a focus on Pan's Labyrinth.
As a catalyst to bring the topic forth.
Yes.
All right. Well, I've got a question here.
All right.
Let's try and define what a fairy tale is and what makes it different from, say, a myth.
That's a great idea, Peter.
A fantasy.
Okay.
You know? So.
What would you define a fairy tale as?
Well, Let me back up and say I would define a myth as something that tries to explain how things came to be, and then does it, you know, through gods, monsters, things like that.
Right.
So
because there is a lot of slippage here in terms of, like, if you look at fantasy movies like Lord of the Rings, is that a fairy tale?
I think that's not.
Well, no. I think that there is no definition of fairy tale. I think there's just indicators that show up that kind of. Let us kind of know that we're
the
lying.
Obvious indicator is, does it have fairies in it?
Well,
know?
No.
That's the obvious one by the name.
Okay,
you know?
But that does not.
That's the root of fairy tales.
Yeah, right. There's some truth to that, but yet there is
Grimm's fairy tales. The common link is all fairies.
Right, but
no,
you don't need
all
fairies.
No,
anymore.
It's not.
It's not.
I
all fairies.
Believe all of them do.
No, actually, no. I did
goose
a little.
Girl,
even Cinderella does.
The Goose Girl.
I did a little research.
The Goose Girl.
I did a little research. I mean, look, Little Red Riding Hood is a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
What fairy is in Little Red Riding Hood?
Talking wolf?
That's not a fairy. That's a talking animal.
An animal that talks is a fairy.
It is not. They are not.
What the hell are you talking about?
You that's not true.
Okay.
No, in fact, I was doing a little research on this, and one of the specific things it said specifically in the research I was doing is that most fairy tales, in fact, many fairy tales don't actually have fairies in them. In fact, they're more renowned for having things like talking animals.
Okay. True.
Honestly, I tend to cluster them.
Also
well, that's your mistake.
Nice. Nice, Peter. Nice, man. Why you gotta pick on Don?
So because the cowardly lion talks, it's a fairy tale?
Well, she's got a fairy godmother, a witch. Well, she's not a fairy godmother, is she?
They're two witches.
Well, and that's
witches.
A fiction, you know?
Bobby.
Well, but let's also point out, I think that when things get to a certain length, they stop being a fairy tale. It stops being a tale. It becomes something bigger.
Okay.
Well, I think in general, I mean, the real definition of fairy tales, I think, are cautionary tales. They're
so
tales
does it have to involve
to...
a moral?
I believe most of the original ones did.
And yet, actually, I did some research on this.
Or to propagate a way of acting and behavior.
In fact, most of the originals didn't have
a moral.
Morals.
No.
The morals were tacked onto them later.
Yeah, I read that too.
I've read different things.
One of the original Little Red Riding Hood stories... Little Red Riding Hood did not get eaten by the wolf because she did a strip tease for him.
No way.
What's the moral to that? What's the moral to that, Don?
The original
the moral to that?
The original moral to the Little Red Riding Hood is don't go into the woods. It was told to young children to keep them out of the forest.
No, she was sent
well,
into the woods by her
Well, don't send strippers
parents.
Into the fucking woods. I mean, hello.
No, the original message was stay on the path. You know, don't leave the path. It wasn't don't go into the woods. It was don't leave the path.
Okay, slight variant.
And yet, how stupid is that? Because, I mean, really, do wolves stay away from the paths?
Sometimes.
Yeah, in that story, it does.
Yeah.
You know.
I think it's have a woodsman.
You're being very specific with
I think
that.
It's have a woodsman on hand.
You know?
I think that's the moral.
Here's a definition off the internet. A fairy tale is a story featuring folkloric characters, such as fairies, goblins, elves, trolls, giants, talking animals, and others. these stories often involve royalty, and modern versions usually have happy endings.
Yeah. Now, that was one of the questions I had. Why have we gotten on this kick lately? Little Mermaid, Shrek, stuff like that, where we're taking our traditional fairy tales and we're saying we cannot have so bad endings. Because that was one of the things that I think actually fairy tales were there to teach. I think that wasn't
Little
about a
Mermaid can go and F themselves. Right. That new one fucked up the ending.
I still like it, but still.
I like it.
You know? But the thing is,
I like it as a story. But right. I agree. It's not the original.
It's not a tragic, beautiful story. It's like a little story. They took the tragedy out.
Yeah, they took the tragedy. Then that's my point. Is they took the tragedy out. But that's what I think the original aspect of fairy tales were there to do. They were to teach children about tragedy and death and hardship in a format that they could understand and thereby sort of grow with. You know, they could go, oh, this is about fear, this is about terror, and this is how you deal with it, rather than any specific, like, Aesop's fable, this is the moral of the story.
But they didn't, like, cut any corners. I mean, cutting people's hearts out.
Yeah.
You know, sending witches to cut people's hearts out and all that shit.
Well, if you think about the time period, you know, you're talking about a time period where it's a little more brutal in terms of, you know,
well,
your
let's remember some of these fairy tales have been, it's hard to talk about a time period with these things.
True.
Like Cinderella's been around since ancient Egypt.
Right.
You know, it's.
Yeah.
I mean.
So Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth.
As an example.
I loved it specifically because, to me, it harkened back to the aspect of what a real fairy tale was. And to me, a real fairy tale is one of those things that basically comes into the childhood id and comes into the childhood mythology and really shows you violence, shows you an unhappy ending, shows you, you know, but also shows you aspects of myth and legend and craziness. The best description that I thought of was that there was the aspects of the fantastic in the real world and aspects of the real world in the fantastic. And that was the sort of mix-up between
the two
of them.
That's kind of what I was hoping the movie would be more. I thought the movie was okay. I thought it was a good movie. But I kind of wished it had more of the crossover. Like, those two worlds were so separate to me.
Right.
That I wanted to see a little bit of a tie-in so that we could.
I thought the little girl was the tie-in.
Actually, I was pleased with the separation because the fairy tale aspects of the movie emphasize it's an escape. You know, it's not a blending.
And you didn't know
if the two mixed, there'd be no escape.
No, but I meant, you know? but even if you saw how she was interpreting her world and changing it to be mystical, I thought that would have been more interesting than just being, all right, here's a really bad day.
The story is of a girl trying to escape this world into another, not find the wonder in this world.
I understand, but we all create fairy tales based off of the knowledge that we have.
So you were saying, like, put the evil captain, in her fairy tale universe.
I think that would have been a bad idea, bad choice, but yes, something like that. See, just take a couple of elements and twist it so that you go, maybe even almost, you know, so you go, oh, I see how she's escaped her world by using this fantasy instead of saying, she's so far out there, she's on a different planet.
Well, the thing is, I think if you incorporated more aspects of her real life into the fairy tale aspect, it would stop calling into question, is this a girl going into escapism? Is she just can't deal with her everyday life and she's escaping? Or is it actually happening?
I'm going to stop for 1 second to do a service for those of our listeners who will not see Pan's Labyrinth but are listening anyway. To summarize the movie real quickly.
Right.
Okay. Pan's Labyrinth
is a movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Pan's Labyrinth is a movie that takes place in Spain during a revolutionary war.
During 1944, end of World War II.
Okay. Extremely violent time period. And you follow the life of a little girl and her mother as she goes to live with her new stepfather, who is a high-ranking official in the army.
Yeah, he's in the Franco-fascist government. Yeah.
Okay. So he lives in this little house in the middle of the woods, with all of his troops, and there are rebels up in the hills that are still fighting.
And that's why they're there.
Now, behind the house is an old abandoned labyrinth that has been there since long before the house was.
Yep.
And she gets lost in the labyrinth one night after following a fairy there.
Mm-hmm.
We're skipping a little. And meets a faun who tells her that she is a fairy princess that he's been looking for quite some time. He wants her to come back to the fairy world and meet her father again. But in order to do so, she has to complete 3 tasks for him. Okay? So over the course of the movie, she completes 3 tasks. And
she screws up on the second one.
These fairy tale tasks are being shown to you side by side with a storyline that takes place in the real world about the army versus these rebels.
Yeah.
It's an intense.
And the army, they're a bunch of douchebags.
Yeah.
Severe douchebags.
Ultra, ultra violent, nasty, nasty man. The captain is portrayed in the first scene. I thought that was a brilliant use of violence.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the film had a brilliant use of violence. That first scene where he goes from being a sort of menacing, calculating individual to just hitting this guy with a bottle.
I thought that was a good scene.
It's not just him hitting someone with a bottle either. It's him hitting him with the butt of the bottle to the middle of the guy's face over and over and over until you see his face collapsing inwards. And they never cut away.
They never cut away. And it is very violent.
I thought that was fine, but I thought that the gratuitous gore and visual violence that happened after that was just almost got silly.
Really?
Yeah, well, like the audience started laughing at one point.
You know, I have a problem.
I think you're misinterpreting why they were laughing. You know, for me, and I did laugh when he's sewing up his face after the captain gets his face cut in half at one point. He's sewing up his face, and they just linger on the shot of him putting the needle through his lip over and over again. And I'm sitting there cracking up not because it's funny, but because I'm so horrified, and I'm unable to disengage from the movie.
Yeah,
you know,
I got the impression it was kind of the same screams that like when a spider, comes on the screen and everyone goes ah. It was like it's kind of like that, you know, that.
So you felt like it should have been the Steven Spielberg thing, like Steven Spielberg cut aspects out of Jaws to keep it more horrifying.
I thought that once you establish that one shot at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you are afraid of the violence, and so there's no reason to show just the gore anymore. That we were already on.
The only thing I wondered in that scene is why she didn't kill him. Why didn't she just finish the job?
I debated that with someone last night.
You know,
she establishes earlier in the movie, you know, I'm a coward. I can't kill him. I'm with him every day. I can put the dagger through his neck.
That's a good point. Okay.
But anyway, we don't mean to be discussing movie stuff. We're here to discuss the fairy tale.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, I think the fairy tale aspects do trip over into thing, like the aspects that she does with the chalk door,
mm-hmm.
is that's how she escapes from her world.
Yeah, that was cool.
You know, and that does actually have a place. You know, people can see the chalk door. They can see the things that she does. They just can't see what she's seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she puts the mandrake root underneath the bed, and it does happen to have an effect. You know, or mm-hmm. you know, whether it's coincidental or not. I like the questioning of it. I like knowing.
No, I agree.
Well,
I really like that.
I really liked the movie, but I was not satisfied with the ending. Okay.
Yeah. Was it because it was upsetting and hard and, you know, little girl, you know?
No. Satisfied just means you don't feel like you got what you needed for the movie to end, whether it was tragic or not.
Is that what you mean?
Well, I think that on a couple different levels. I think one level is that, you know, there is a question at the end,
mm-hmm.
as to what has happened, as whether or not this has been
real or false.
Real or her imagination.
Is this a happy ending or a sad one?
Right.
But I thought that was the highlight of the movie.
What do you mean by that?
Not knowing was the highlight of the movie.
You think that's the best part of the movie?
That's the best part of the movie.
See, for me, I wasn't satisfied. One of the reasons I wasn't satisfied is because if it is supposed to be a happy ending, I didn't feel particularly happy about the fairy tale aspect, about her coming to her father. It was kind of cold, a little sterile.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that magical. It wasn't like, wow, look how great her life is going to be.
Right.
And some of that was shot.
That's interesting. I agree with that.
But she was with her mom.
Yeah.
Well, but even then, I mean,
her mom was there with a new baby and everything.
It didn't really feel, I mean, it wasn't enough for me. It didn't feel like it.
I agree. You know. I totally agree with that.
And then the other problem I had is that they killed her in the beginning. They showed it in the very first shot.
Right.
And then when she dies at the end, it's not like a surprise. And it would have been so much more powerful if you hadn't have known.
I agree. You know? That was a poor... There was no reason to have that first shot at the beginning, I don't think. That's a commonly used thing in movies. And usually... It's like, ooh, how are we gonna get to here?
Yeah,
but this was like,
it wasn't like it. You know, how are we gonna get to here? No, you show something like that at the beginning to either draw a dramatic question of how are we gonna get to there, or to then switch it in some way, to trick the audience.
And there was no trick.
And there was nothing dramatic about how we get to here. I mean, she's with these violent people. At any moment, she could get shot. It's not like, you know,
the thing that I liked about it. Was that what the question of what it called for me was that is this the dying memory that she's having? Is what the whole movie was, is this her last thought? Is that like she's that, going through the whole of her last thought
the
and then her last
of
thought
Owl
is,
Creek or what's that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The guy snaps his neck.
Yeah, that's the Ambrose Bierce short story, yeah. And you know,
It sort of comes across as if that's what it is, though.
Right.
I mean, it has a much stronger implication that that's what it is than that there could be some truth to the fairy tale by the end, I think.
I think in a way that we're very educated as a film audience, and us specifically, and that many more people will not pick up on that.
But I wouldn't have been great if she died at the end, everyone went,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. The poor girl died. Instead of like, oh yeah, we knew she was dead.
Yeah. Well, when the blood started crawling back into her nose at the beginning, I had a question of what was going on, but I didn't know.
Well, I didn't, and I have to admit, I did the same thing you did. I understood where it was going the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think what that does for me is it's a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
The entire movie is different now because I know how it ends. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not wondering about the ending anymore. I'm wondering about the trip.
Okay. You know? And that more successful than not knowing the ending or less?
I would say that as an ending, it's less successful. But as a movie, I'm more appreciative of each step along the way, you know, because because I know what's on the last page.
You love this movie, Don, right?
I really enjoyed this movie. It clicked with me on a lot of levels. I felt it was a very emotional movie.
Yeah, I would say on the three sci-fi fantasy movies of this little mini season: The Fountain, Pan's Labyrinth. And Children of Men. This is at the bottom of the three movie
for
pile
you? For you.
Me. Yeah.
See, okay. You know, when I looked at Rotten Tomatoes at the time, it was like a 99%.
Still is.
And so I kind of went in
I don't get that
kind of
at all.
Really hoping for that. I actually found it to be more like a 70% for me.
Yeah.
You know, I would
definitely.
I mean, like
it
I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I truly liked it. But like a 99% normally for me is something that really changes.
That's Godfather.
This is
not even remotely close to The Godfather.
And I don't mean to be silly, but Matrix, when I saw The Matrix, I walked out of that and I was like, wow.
I mean,
we forget, you know, Matrix 2 and 3 came out and kind of
and
tarnished.
Debased the first one.
Yeah, they basically desecrated the first one. but no, when I walked out of that movie, I was like, whoa. You know, I mean, I would be
shocked. Is it still, Pan's Labyrinth is still
a
99%?
Yep.
It means other reviewers have given it.
Yeah.
Not just other reviewers. Like, you two are the only critical people that didn't like it that I've met so far.
You know, No. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying that I had expected more
Godfather.
But, you know. I mean, like...
And I still adore it, but
two other people I know who are less... They're less, you know, film raw than we are. That's very verbal.
Film raw.
You know
film
what
raw.
I mean.
Yes. No,
film
I know exactly
raw.
What you mean raw. When you say film raw.
Raw
Raw's the God of Sun.
When I spoke to them about it, mm-hmm. there's actually a very quiet reverence in their voice about the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And that speaks volumes to me.
Because,
that's a different quality than The Matrix. The Matrix got me excited. I feel no reverence towards The Matrix, you know?
I do.
Really?
Yeah, I love that movie.
I can see how. Because there is a metaphysical aspect to it. But I really, in terms of being told a fairy tale, felt like Pan's Labyrinth hit it for me more than anything in recent history.
Yeah, no,
it
I
felt
I
like
agree,
a fairy
you know?
It did feel like a modern fairy tale.
You know,
well, but now what's interesting is what you brought up a minute ago, which is that it not only did it hit fairy tale, but it hit Grimm's fairy tale.
Very specifically Grimm's fairy tale.
You know, the old school, ultra violent, not like, you know, I mean, because if you think about it, Disney has changed our concept of what a fairy tale is.
Changed the icon.
You know, it's taken
after you, Disney.
It's taken all. Well, look, honestly, I love those movies. Really,
no, the old. I love some, like the, you know, Snow White, where what's his face is, where she's going after her heart and all that stuff.
Let's ask the question then. Now, does a happy ending make the fairy tale less?
Yeah.
Does it?
I don't require happy endings in any movie.
You think it makes it less?
But I'm fine with happy endings too. Like to me that is not the ending does not.
Which ending is better in Blade Runner?
Well, first of all, when it comes to heroes, when it comes to hero movies, to me, I like my heroes dead at the end.
Okay.
I love my hero dead.
Okay.
I love sacrifice movies. To me, those are ultimate movies to me.
That's funny. I didn't think we'd agree on that.
I love if when my hero's dead at the end, I come out going, "Wow, that was."
I'm big on the bittersweet. I don't think like any great achievement can be made without sacrifice.
See now, what are a couple of your favorite hero dead movies?
Like Gladiator could only have ended that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Going back to the 70s, you know, it's not my favorite movie, but I actually thought the ending of Omega Man was very satisfying.
Hmm.
You know.
Wow.
Omega Man.
Wow.
But Omega even Man? I mean,
no,
even
I don't
like
this at all.
Like plague breaks out in the world. There are a couple. They become like nighttime zombie type people. They're still intelligent, but they're just malicious. And this one guy finds he's immune to the disease. There are a couple other people who haven't been infected, and they're trying to find a cure. When he runs into them, and long story short, they find out he is immune. There's an antibody in his blood, and he ends up being killed at the end of the movie by the zombies as in order to help everyone escape. But as he dies into this fountain, right? So his blood gets into the water supply, and so they still have the potential for the future. Hmm. You know, it was very nice.
Hmm. That must be based on there's an old
Vincent
great
Price.
No, actually, there's an old great thing. It was by somebody Matheson. Was it Richard Matheson? I Am Legend.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the first one. The Vincent Price one was based on that, and then they made another one in the 70s based on the Vincent Price.
All right, back to topic at hand. why don't we – I'd love to think, especially you, Don, since you, I think, are really – well, I guess you really love this movie too.
I loved it, yeah.
Put this movie up against some other fairy tale movies.
Okay.
Princess Bride.
Ooh.
Are we
That's
comparing
harsh.
And contrasting?
Comparing and contrasting, or
like
saying,
putting it, is Princess Bride a fairy tale movie? I think it is.
And how do you feel like that?
No fairies in
to
it. No
two different genres, though. I mean,
but Princess Bride smokes Pan's Labyrinth, as far as I think. I mean, Princess Bride is a.
I don't
apples
think
and
they
oranges.
Can be compared. Yeah.
Apples
yeah.
and oranges.
Apples, I really okay. think it's kind of like.
But I'll tell you, I do like Princess Bride is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
But again, Pan's Labyrinth, in my opinion.
See, no, I don't think so.
I really liked it, but no.
I love Gilliam, but isn't that's Gilliam, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Gilliam, but I did not love
Wizard of Oz.
I don't think of that as a fairy tale.
Wizard of Oz is an icon.
I think of it as a fiction.
What's up with the whole rating of movie? I mean, like trying to say which one's better or worse than Pan's Labyrinth. What makes them interesting in comparison, though?
All right.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not a quantitative scale.
Okay. Then,
you know, yeah, Pan's Labyrinth, I think,
like,
had...
If I'm trying to think of other movies that kind of click in the same idea, right? I guess
Legend
clicks in there a bit.
Legend, for me, and I think Pan's Labyrinth did it better than Legend, actually.
What is the Angela Lansbury
Murder, She Wrote?
Red Riding Hood movie? Song of Wolves?
Right. Yeah.
To Run with Wolves? That's a strong contender.
You know, it's interesting, going back to Wizard of Oz for a quick second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you compare it to Pan's Labyrinth, what's interesting is you start to notice the violence of Wizard of Oz, even though it's hidden by the film and the way they filmed it.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of violence in that. I mean, you know, there was, you know, the person crushed by a house and a person melting.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he
water,
has...
You know, like acid. You know, it's like that's a
you know he's setting the scarecrow thing. On fire in the you know everything.
Oh, did he really in the original?
Yeah, she's
in the movie too.
She likes the scarecrow on fire and everything like that. I mean, L. Frank Baum was actually I think creating a modern fairy tale for his time because he was really you know hearkening back to those ideas.
I guess Alice in Wonderland, but I have a hard time. It's so trippy. It's hard for me to.
Alice in Wonderland is a trip.
Oh yeah.
Although I really felt like he like. Like, this director wanted to go to Alice in Wonderland, specifically even putting her in the dress at one point. I loved his iconography in this film. I really loved
his
iconography.
The design was
cool. Now, what was the Reese Witherspoon movie recently that it was a retelling of Red Riding Hood again, where she's like a white, she's a trailer trash girl trying to get to her grandmother's house because her mom's been busted for crack and...
No idea.
Does anyone remember this?
No idea.
Well, you know, here's another thing that's interesting about fairy tales. In myth stories, most magic on some level comes from the gods.
Right.
Okay. So even if it's a magical sword or a magical, you know, like Medusa was someone created by God.
Right.
You know, by the gods. Okay. Now you look at fairy tales. The magic that comes from fairy tales is from a more sinister place.
Yeah.
And it's more mysterious.
Or not divine.
It's not divine. Yes.
What I love about the magic in fairy tales, and specifically what Pan's Labyrinth did with it, was that in every fairy tale that I really love, like the Tinderbox, like the Goose Girl, there is specifically no magic. Is the person who is your protagonist doesn't have any magic, and they have to get by on gumption and strength and the willing to go that extra distance
in a world that is very dangerous
and
because
smart.
It is magic,
you know. And so the little girl has to figure out how to get the stones into the frog's mouth, and you know in the tinderbox he has to figure out how to get past these three large dogs.
It seems like it's always a puzzle.
Well, it seems like it's the fantastic invading the mundane to me.
And that's what I really love, is when the that is one of my favorite themes in any story, is when the fantastic invades the mundane.
Which is always interesting for me when you look at things like Alice in Wonderland and The Wizard of Oz, where you have the mundane invading the fantastic.
Fantastic. Right.
You know?
What about the subtle ones like Water for Chocolate? Do you consider that a fairy tale?
I liked Like Water for Chocolate, but I sort of left with a little bit...
I was just
Baker's chocolate taste in my mouth.
I was just so angry at the protagonist. Everything else went out of my head. God. I hated her guts.
Neverending Story.
Oh, I went back and saw it again. I loved it the first time. Actually, the first time I saw Neverending Story, because everything died at the end of it.
Yeah.
I had the same sick feeling that I ended when I finished Pan's Labyrinth. And when I went back and saw Neverending Story again, I was like, this is a piece of shit.
Yeah, it doesn't live up.
Yeah.
It's really a piece of crap.
Yeah. What about the latest Narnia movie? Is that a fairy tale, or is that just straight fantasy?
Again, we have the mundane invading the fantastic.
But it's a little... Once it gets to a certain length, it stops being a tale again.
It becomes a fiction.
It becomes... Okay. Yeah, it becomes a full-length
So you
story.
Actually... Aaron,
but how is that any... So it was a half hour longer than Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, but wasn't your complaint about Pan's Labyrinth that it actually should have been shorter? It could have been told in 20 minutes?
Yeah, but that's not because I wanted it to be fit into a fairy tale model. I just didn't think it was a two-hour movie.
Right.
I thought it was a 20-minute movie.
But you actually thought it was a fairy tale. Like... Instant,
yeah,
you
but
know,
I think a fairy tale can be long. I just don't think that movie needed it to be that long.
Here's what's weird. Like, I read Neil Gaiman's Stardust, and that's a fairy tale, you know, and it comes across a fairy tale, even though it's even though it's longer. But yet, I think of certain things like Lord of the Rings does not feel like a fairy tale.
Lord of the Rings feels like a mythic tale to me.
It's very clearly fantasy to me, okay? And when I think of...
it's an epic.
Narnia. I don't really think of it as a fairy tale either.
I think...
What about Harry Potter? Because most people are putting Harry Potter as a fairy tale.
I wouldn't do it.
No.
It's a fiction.
No. I would say no. I don't know why.
Fairy tales require a certain degree of simplicity for me. You know, a certain degree of just, you know, A goes to B goes to C. Not deep and, you know, deep and hidden motivations that can only be explained in episode 3. You know, and
well, that's because you're looking at them as a whole. I mean, you could read just one book of Harry Potter, right?
No, but I think Harry Potter is kind of like, you know, the Chrétien de Troyes, you know, sort of knights and heroes story. He's like an Arthurian, you know, story. It's like there's magic and there's magical aspect. No, absolutely.
If there wasn't magic in the book, nobody would be thinking in those terms.
But there's also a difference in terms of complexity, because most fairy tales have some level of a quest that you have to accomplish, okay?
Okay.
It's normally like, okay, you know, here are three tasks you have to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Find the seven crystals.
But I wouldn't, I mean, Little Red Riding Hood didn't have a task.
Get to Grandma's house.
Get to Grandma's house. Yeah.
Well, I can say that about, I mean, Harry Potter is save his school.
No, it's not. He doesn't have, he's never given a task. Harry Potter is just Harry Potter.
I would not say the definition of a fairy tale is that there's a quest or some mission.
I don't think anyone's saying it's the definition.
No, but one of the overriding.
But it's a strong recurring element. It is a very strong recurring element that there's something that you have to do.
Okay.
You know, it's like you come to a place and there's something, you know, something that you're supposed to do when you get there. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like.
Snow White's a good exception. Snow White doesn't have a quest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's just trying to survive. But when you go back to the other archetypal ones, Cinderella, you know, in the actual Cinderella story, she has multiple quests given to her by her stepmother. You want to go to the ball? Pick all these lentils out of the ashes.
Yep.
You know?
Pan's Labyrinth is classic. You know, you must do three things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that as soon as you say you must do three things, you know, and then suddenly you go, okay, this feels like a fairy tale. And the thing about Pan's Labyrinth is what makes it a fairy tale mm-hmm. is not what happens in her real world. If you were just, if you stripped that all out and you just made it into the story about this girl who's given a quest.
Mm-hmm.
And you followed her, it's a very simple story that happens very quickly. That's why you said at one point, it's a 20-minute movie. Mm-hmm. Well, the fairy tale aspect of it is
a
20-minute
movie.
Yeah,
you
know, it's not that long. It wouldn't take that long.
It's a 6-minute movie.
Hmm. You know? So it might even be. You know, it would go very quickly. So,
what about Willow?
Well, hang on. I'm not done with my point yet.
I'm
trying to jump
ahead.
All
right. Man.
But then
yeah,
you get,
the quest.
Then
got
you get
it.
To something like Narnia. And it's more complicated.
Yeah, I think it's the hero's journey. Then it's the hero's journey. You're telling the story of the hero's journey.
Now it's a hero's journey story, but it's not specifically a fairy tale.
I don't know if I would use any of those definitions. I think fairy tales is kind of like art and pornography is like,
you know,
you only
know
it when you see it. Like all these definitions to me, I think is almost BS. To say
again,
that the quest thing and all that. I could do a fairy tale probably. You probably would think as a fairy tale that didn't have a quest.
I didn't say that you couldn't.
All right.
I never made
so
the
Harry
claim.
Potter might fall into that.
No, but to me, Harry Potter is much more of a hero's journey than it is a fairy tale.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's a lot of bleeding in terms of each into each other.
Right.
You know, if you talk about one being mythic, one being the hero's journey, and one being a fairy tale, they all bleed. But I think, you know, in and of itself, Harry Potter is much more a hero's journey than it is a fairy tale.
Right.
You know?
Okay. And cool. Again, you know, Harry Potter, here's the thing. When you look at Harry Potter, first of all, Harry Potter's structure is a mystery structure.
Mm.
Okay? I mean, really, that's what it is. Harry Potter are very intelligent mystery stories set in a fantasy world. Okay?
That I can definitely, yeah. That.
So just because they've got, like, some magical creatures doesn't make it a fairy tale.
Right. Yeah, it's more of a mystery with
some...
Slap
a giant in something doesn't turn it into a fairy tale.
Right.
Right.
And in the same way, Lord of the Rings, you know, just because it's got fairies in it, and it actually does have, you know, fairies in it and elves... It's not really a fairy tale. It doesn't have those elements, you know.
Right.
So that's
well, arguably it does, but they've been spun out to such a complexity
that no longer does it. Yeah,
yeah. There's a certain degree of simplicity that is required by a fairy tale.
Absolutely, that's the sense. Yeah.
And
okay.
So it's fairy tales, dark coffee, black coffee, no sugar, no cream, no mocha java, nothing, just black coffee.
Well, I mean, keep in mind the original fairies were not these sweet, happy things that we see portrayed now.
That was what my first thing that I loved about Pan's Labyrinth was that the fairies were creepy as hell.
Yeah.
Was that...
That stick insect thing was scary.
Stick insect
I was like,
thing.
Oh, the praying mantis.
Yeah.
I have two limericks. I have one called Harry Potter. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Born of Satan, the crazies are screaming. The one book their children are reading. But with a minister's spin, this education's a sin. What do you expect from a bunch of inbreeding?
Ooh.
Wow.
Send all email comments to Aaron@geekson.com.
Oh, if you're convincing your kid not to read Harry Potter, you're an idiot. For God's sake, at least the kid's
it's
reading.
It's the work of Satan.
And this
Satan's
one's about the movie
very...
Willow.
A-A-R-O-N.
Oh, no.
Here's the one about the movie Willow.
I liked Willow.
Willow as a movie was a snore, but there was something it's hard to ignore. Nope, it wasn't the dwarf, but that damn blasted morph. I'm sure there's not an effect that's used more.
Yeah, it's true. When the witch at the end of it is going with Willow and is turning into a duck, into a heron,
that's
into a...
That's the first place that was used.
That was the first morph. First morph, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember just my jaw dropping. I was like, couldn't believe it. And then after that, we had to see every car commercial turn, like a car turn into a tiger and shit like that.
I just like the Michael Jackson video. It's black, it's white, yeah.
Anyway, that's my two limericks.
Excellent. Shall we close out Pan's Labyrinth? Is there anything anyone wants to
Let's just ask one quick question. Mm-hmm. Does Disney do justice to these fairy tales?
No.
Absolutely. Yeah, Disney absolutely. Look, they are loved. They are loved. Beloved. Now, look, do they do justice to every single one of them? Maybe some of them are not quite as good. Maybe, and look, there is beauty in the original violent endings, but let's all be honest, okay? If they had done the original violent endings that are completely, you know, sad,
the Little Mermaid would have been appropriate, that ending.
I don't. They couldn't have done it. The kids would have been sobbing.
They
hysterically.
Kid Bambi. They killed Bambi's mom.
Well, hold on.
They killed Bambi's mom
one other,
early.
There's one other cynicism
the
I want to throw in here.
They killed Nemo's mom early in the story, but there is not a tragic ending in any.
You know what? Our kids need some of that
Disney
shit.
Let me just throw in there that Disney never kills off a merchandisable character.
Right.
I'm not going to say it's because of artistic merit.
I agree.
I'm going to say it's because they want to sell those aerial action figures.
But she's dead, Mom.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you that I hear what you're
she's
saying.
She's seafoam.
And there is validity to what you're saying.
See, no, Don.
Now with action seafoam.
See, exactly. I think
you could take
an aerial action figure and you actually, you know, you can make it into a soap scrubber that actually becomes foam.
Or you
foam
drop it to water and just foams away.
Yeah, Don, you're just not thinking creative enough.
Awful.
That's awful.
No, but
now
look,
back to Sifo.
I guarantee you that the reason that they did not kill her off was not because of merchandising. I guarantee you
was an artistic reason.
It was still a financial reason. I mean, it was still because they knew that the movie would
franchise.
Probably make a lot more money if they didn't kill her. You know, I mean, even as a single shot.
But. Merchandising aside, I regret bringing that issue. what do you believe that does to the moral of the fairy tale, and is that a good thing?
I believe
that it completely changed it to a different moral.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, with
The Little Mermaid, for example, what is the new moral?
Well, the problem that I think that we've had with Disney films, and the reason why I said no, I didn't like them, it's not because individually I don't like the movie. It's because over a scheme, I think Disney doesn't teach anything but love is the best, love is the best, love conquers all, love conquers all, love conquers all. And with a fairy tale, because they're dark, you have to draw your own conclusions and you have to get into the psychology of yourself and your own dark side in order to understand it. And that is a much better lesson to be taught than just love conquers all over, you know, every time. It teaches us the aspects that there are dark things in our lives that we can then understand and rationalize and learn from. Rather than just, well, you know, if I love this enough, it'll all go away. It'll all go my way.
Do you feel that's a fair assessment, Peter?
I'm not sure.
Listen, I think that Disney has done some good stuff before, and I think
I agree.
And I think that
Old Yeller.
I think that they've done some justice to reimagining fairy tales, because I think that they should be reimagined.
Fairy tales are supposed to grow and change with the society they're in. Though I also say by making a fairy tale a movie and then that movie becoming the norm of the fairy tale locks and freezes a fairy tale.
Well, the only thing that locks and freezes it is damn Disney lawyers.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what locks and
the
freezes.
Mouse
but
being...
there's one last thought I want to interject with it, which is I believe with the happy endings... Right, that Disney brings to all these fairy tales that they readjust.
What movie theater are you going to?
El Capitan, baby, every time.
You get happy endings?
The moral that is brought is, you know, break social mores, strive for what you want, you can achieve if you believe in yourself.
Right.
Right? Which is a wonderful kind of all-American moral.
Mm-hmm.
But what is lost... are the cautionary tales of the past, which is, you know, step off the path and you will pay the price.
Right.
Don't obey your, you know, don't listen to your father's warnings. You will pay the price.
Obey.
You know, it's the dangers that are lost, which I think maybe partially, I mean, maybe I'm reading way too much into this. One of the things that contributes to the American mentality of, you know, I can do whatever I want. I can achieve. Even if it's necessary to occasionally break those taboos, break those social mores.
Cool.
And it may be a contributing factor to kind of the discarding of the more conservative ways of thinking of yesteryear.
Also, if you look at American...
Just want to put it out.
Also, if you look at American television in general, we live in a cult of love. You know, it is America's main religion isn't Christianity or whatever it is. The main religion of America is love. I mean, every bachelor, bachelorette, you know, how do I find this relationship every day on every television show? You can flip and you can find somebody where they're going, oh, my God, it's love. This is what I need to find. And what that's coming from in many ways is what we've ingrained in our children. You know, if our ideal is romantic, idealistic love, which can conquer all, then, you know, absolutely that's what you're striving for. If you're teaching a lesson of things are hard and you learn and you go through it and you make a difference, that's a completely different lesson. So I think, you know, we're ingraining the cult of love very early.
Maybe. I think we've watched.
Neither a good or a bad thing.
Neither a good or a bad thing.
Here's I'm thinking about what you said a moment ago, Don, in terms of, you know, the cautionary side of things. Okay. Well, there's two sort of ways to approach the cautionary tale. One cautionary tale is tragedy, okay? And that is the classic cautionary tale. Tragedy and corruption are the two classic cautionary do not do this, this is a bad idea tales.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, let's be honest. They're not that common prevalent in our society. We don't like them that much.
No.
Now, they have to be really good for us to go out and see them.
Specifically American society. Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't really been outside.
Schindler's List, good cautionary tale. Not watching it every weekend.
I think I just saw a movie last night. The what is it called? The Children of Men. I think that was a cautionary tale. That was awesome.
But would you watch it over and over and over and over and over again?
Well, does that? What are we talking about?
Star Wars. I'll watch over and over again.
Type movies tend to be things you just tend to rewatch.
Yeah. Princess Bride.
You mean talking about money making things?
No, I'm saying like Princess Bride, I'll watch 40 times because
Are we getting this right, Peter? Is that what you're kind
of we're sort of in the right, okay. But I'm just thinking about your specific example because your example was not a tragic ending. It was a complicated ending, but it was not tragic. Even though he dies, we don't feel like it's an awful thing that he has died. Okay, that's not a true tragedy.
Okay, I didn't know we were talking about tragedies. I thought we were saying cautionary tales.
Well, no, but I said, you know, that most, you know...
He's saying most cautionary tales are tragedies.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you are correct that there is a cautionary tale of... built in that, into the society. Mm-hmm. But the cautionary tale is not about the actions of the hero. Like, what Don was talking about is the cautionary tale of... if you don't listen to your dad, then you do what he tells you not to do, then you're going to get like murdered and eaten by something.
But like,
giants,
but that's not what the tale of Little Mermaid was. It was, there was the cautionary tale. Don't go against your dad because you're going to get yourself in a bad spot.
Mm-hmm.
She then had the opportunity to get out of the bad spot. Mm-hmm. They gave her the out. Mm-hmm. And the real true story, the end was a love story, which is love does... trump everything else. She dies for the person she loves.
Right.
She doesn't go and marry some a-hole.
Love is sacrifice.
Yeah, and that it essentially is the same story as the Disney-fied version, but times 20 million.
Right.
Like, I came out of there going, wow, she really loved that man. She died for him instead of like, she's getting boned by that, you know, blonde-haired a-hole. Who was, you know, fell
black-haired a-hole
or whatever it was.
I would put forward that any happy ending, even if there is a cautionary element in the story, a happy ending dilutes it.
Well,
you know?
Here's what I was going to talk about. I'm going to just shift this to the heroic story for a second.
Okay.
I at a certain point in my life, I was working for someone who had interviewed a bunch of successful people, very successful people. And I was reading these interviews, and I started to notice that there were similarities between these people's lives and the hero's journey by it's not Vogler.
Campbell,
Joseph Campbell. And that was really interesting. It started to get me to think, okay? And, you know, I started to notice that, you know, there was, for example, a lot of people had mentors. People who were highly successful often had mentors very early on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it got me thinking. Now, here's what the hero's journey is. Okay, the hero's journey typically starts in your ordinary world. Ordinary world is, you know, the village.
Right.
Okay, and in most movies often start this way too. Okay, so the hero starts in the ordinary world, which is a very safe place to be. You know, the village is fairly safe. You know, you're a kid. Right. You know, people take care of you. So you know, your adults are there. If there's going to be a problem, they'll handle it, right? And then something comes along and there's this sort of entry of something new into their world, okay? Mm-hmm. And they get this thing that's called the call to adventure. And the call to adventure says, hey, look, let's leave this ordinary place. Let's go out into the world. Let's do something. And typically, the hero rejects the call to adventure. It's a specific part. It's very interesting that that's there. And the reason they reject the call to adventure is because it's representative of a couple things. The first is it's representative of the fact that, you know, it is actually dangerous out there. If you walk outside the village, there are actually things out there that can kill you. Mm-hmm. And so it is a natural impulse to say, no, I'm not going to do that because it's dangerous, okay? Then eventually, you know, at a certain point, the hero changes their mind. There's an acceptance of the call. But before they leave, they have something called the Threshold Guardian, okay? And so when they go to try and leave this world, the village, there's mm-hmm. typically something that tries to keep them from leaving.
Right.
Okay. Sometimes it's, you know, it's a magic door. Sometimes it's someone whose job is to stop them. And they have to prove that they are talented enough to go out into the world. Because if they can't get past this, they're definitely going to get their ass handed to them.
So how are you – where does this link up?
Well, where I'm headed with this in a second is that if you look at the mythic journey, mm-hmm. what's really interesting is how many things are built into it to explain that there are a lot of dead heroes.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, and that's why there's a mentor, because if going out there on your own, you're going to get your ass handed to you. So when you were talking about the cautionary elements of, you know, of the stories, well, you know, most heroes' journeys are very much cautionary tales of, if you don't make this type of change, then you will fail and you will be destroyed. You know, mm-hmm. heroes have, they get to a point, you know.
I disagree that that's not the message being given by heroes. That's deeply hidden within a hero's journey, maybe. But the message of the hero's journey is to inspire people to change themselves. It's not
it,
to.
It is to, actually, it's a roadmap. Yeah. Of how to change yourself. And the roadmap...
And it's not a cautionary. It's a roadmap on what to do, not what to avoid.
Yes, I'll buy that. But
well, it's both.
But built into it, I would say, is this element of it is not an easy path, and you have to suffer. And that's why there's literally a point in the hero's journey called death and rebirth.
Right.
And there's a point where, like, you know, the hero seems to die.
Are you reading a book somewhere that we're not seeing?
No, he's just got all.
This is good stuff for most all writers.
You've got specific terms for each one of these.
Straight out of Joseph Campbell.
We need to like wrap this up because we're already. Okay.
But anyway, the point being, death and rebirth. Because literally, the person that you are, you have to let the person you are inside die, mm-hmm. so that a new person can come forward. And process of death is difficult. That process.
And that's exactly what I think they did in Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, factually and, you know, physically and metaphysically.
She had to die physically to be reborn in this other world. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
And she learned what?
Not to fuck with a guy with a Luger.
Basically. You're right. That is a simple tale.
That is a really simple lesson.
Alrighty. Anyway, I would suggest everyone to go see Pan's Labyrinth, at least for the design.
Yep.
It's really a beautiful movie.
Visually brilliant.
It's got a little Ridley Scott in there. Did you notice all the particles in the air?
I did.
All the particles. I mean, there was so much. There's Holocaust imagery. Yeah. There's
just the costumes.
Brilliant, brilliant stuff in it.
So anyway, I would definitely suggest it. And I would like to have a discussion of the other two movies when you guys see it. Maybe we'll do a double episode. Of this kind of the new non-blockbuster sci-fi
nihilistic,
which is great. I thought
I'm loving that. I'm loving that we're seeing more thought going into these movies.
A little more Dark City, a little less.
And I suggest that all of you go out and see those at least to support it, whether you thought the movie was great or not. If we put money into these films, we're gonna get they're gonna get made. More are gonna get made, and we're not gonna see just Star Wars.
I think part of it is that, you know, the reason why we see more Star Wars-y type stuff than we see Pan's Labyrinth-y type stuff is because of the money, and they don't trust us.
Yep.
To enjoy something smarter,
and you know, quite frankly, they shouldn't, because people don't go see those movies.
Yep.
Understood.
So go out there and
Night at the Museum still number one this week.
Vote with your dollar. Alrighty. Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
Excellent. I hope we have a great new year. I've got some people I'm going to call up so we can get some cool interviews.
Matt's got some fantastic interviews coming up.
Ideas.
Fun stuff.
Great topics. People have sent us some ideas.
And if you have more ideas for the new year, send them to us at geeks@geekson.com.
Or check us out at geekson.com and just come and talk to us on the forums.
Forums are popping.
We have awesome forumites, by the way. They're warm, they're fuzzy, they're very inviting. Come.
They're fuzzy?
Us.
Yes. So anyway, visit us on the site, send us an email, give us a comment whether you like or dislike the certain segments of the show, and we'll see you next time.
Have a great geek week.
Have a good geek week. Bye.
Geek it out.